Mr. Cheeseman, Reel 21. Can you recall where you were and what you were doing when the declaration of war was made?
Yes, I can. As I say, we were in this camp between Ember and Warminster, where incidentally our 3rd Battalion had moved from Lynn the year before, and indeed the whole the 2nd from Farnborough and the 5th from Perrondon, we were all going to go there. It had a lot of problems, but you know, Warminster was going to be our main place. Anyway, you will appreciate, by the way, that before the war, wirelesses, you know, radios, were not really thick on the ground. And so it's no use saying that I was sitting down and I heard over the wireless fast in the morning, and therefore we are at war. I didn't. It was a tea time effect. So obviously it took that long from 11 o'clock, was it, on a Sunday morning, until tea time. Then it just swept through the camp. We are at war. And no one says, oh, I'm going anywhere. Everyone except, wasn't a question of saying, oh, I don't believe it. We believed it. It swept through the campaign. And next morning, we returned back to our main barracks at Perrondon to clear out the cost, all our stuff was there. We cleared out everything there within about 2 days and moved about 2 miles on the other side of the main Andover Tidworth Road to where the TA camps used to be held. The ablution, the taps and what have you, they were there, and the dugout of the trees were there. That was, we moved there, no campus, we just lay under the lorries or in the lorries and what have you, and gradually we got canvas, and I don't know how long it would be. It would be a fortnight perhaps that we were there when we suddenly said, "Where you are, we have to defend the southern approaches to the country's capital." We go down to the name will come to me, the Fording Bridge.
What we are personal feelings to know that war was now with you?
I accepted it. This is just a fact of life. It just, you know, again, I think I was showing my stupidity, as it were. It's a fact of life, fair enough. And this business, you know, will be all over by Christmas. That didn't come into it all. This is a fact of life. When it'll finish, well, it'll finish when it finishes. There's no argument, of course. We win. You understand that. We got the best stuff in the world. We win, but fact of life. Can't say I was happy. I can't say I was sad. Just accepted it.
Did your parents show any emotionals?
Nothing to do with my parents. I'm down the south, you say.
I'm thinking in terms that they were at home knowing that their son was in the army.
It could have. Oh, I mean, no end.
But you wouldn't know that.
I didn't know that, and indeed, my parents was the farthest thing away from my mind. There was an element of excitement about it, an element of dread, yes. But as I say, these were passing feelings, largely, you know.
Were you not brought together with the commanding officer telling you that great glories lay ahead of you or whatever? Nothing like that.
And I remember, that's the detail as well. I was, so by the way, now I'd been allocated as the fitter's workshop lorry driver, the old big crossing, six-wheel crossing. And I remember I had my engine when the crossing door started. Well, it started up, and I was sitting up right well there when a chap, from another unit, which I never knew, he was, they'd come in the field the side of the road, and thing, came running up to me and says, "Is your name Cheeseman?" And, "Yes." "And my name's French." "Well, is yours?" "Frenchy's Fish Shops at South Moor, where I live." "Oh!" "I see, you're not half the French." "Yeah, I said, no, I'd gone to school with them." And at that moment, move off. And that's all I saw, and I saw no more. And the last time the next information I got from him was after I retired. My wife and I did a lot of sequence dancing. And one of the women, widow, she talked one day and she said, "Martha French." I said, "Yes, my husband." I said, "And I told her the last time I saw him, yes, he was killed in France." You know, so that was just in passing. We went down the Fording Bridge, and in our fitter's wagon, we fitted it out very nicely. But the engine one, for instance, made a lovely hammock and what have you. We were cozy and what have you.
Just before we go on, were the lorries still the open, no windscreen types that you've always been used to?
Yes.
You hadn't got any of the new stuff?
Oh, no, there was not. In fact, when the new stuff came along, they were open windscreen as well. But we didn't live there, but anyway, we got down to, at least I'm now talking about myself, because at that time, I didn't know what the battalion was doing. I heard later, as it were, that the battalion were in billets, for instance. I got down there on the night. Funnily enough, there was a fish shop over there, and we had some fish and chips that night. We got down to it, and next morning, we were on our way again. But that's not where we were going at all. That the 1st Tank Brigade, I'm using that term because it probably was still called the 1st Tank Brigade then, but names change. But the 1st Tanks Brigade's first wartime duty was to defend the northern approaches to London. And so it was convoy stuff again. And it was an exercise, of course, up from Fording Bridge to Andover, Oxford. Anyway, we finished up at Harpenden in Hertfordshire. At Rothamsted Manor, big, you can imagine, bride's head, we visited it. And that's where we were going to be billeted. As I say, we didn't even know the proper procedures for billeting. The squadron sergeant major had gone up ahead of us and had requisitioned this. I didn't know this at the time. And there's this manner. And we lesser boys were sent up to the same squadrons up on the top. And so I'm mechanically minded, and I say I was still a bit stupid, still a teenager, as it were. I thought, "Oh, this will do for me, it'll do for me." Well, I forget his name now, but a friend. Tiny little place, just big enough to put two bedrolls down, things like that, with a wooden column, about a foot wide and about a foot thick and a yard wide, covered right in the middle, and things like that. And we settled down, and when everything was settled down, we can't get more, we were here. Tick, tock, and the hours we picked a nice place to sleep in the clock tower. Anyway,
was it free of furniture? Were you just sleeping on the floor, were you?
Oh, yes. I don't know what was downstairs at all, office or what have you. There was other parts of the battalion billeted in Harpenden itself, of course. We were there perhaps a week in this problem set manner. And during that week, by the way, I landed guard duty. And I was on guard that night, as a matter of fact, and had the stables to the guard room. And there were rats in there, stores, you know, but we were lying, it was not my turn, there was somebody else on guard. And I was walking up with a revolver shot. And never guess what happened. We, in the gardens around the front, was lots of ornaments, monuments in white marble. On a moonless night, what have you, you just barely see them. So I found out later that this was sort of how spooky it was. But right at the perimeter of the main garden, there was a field where there was horses and a donkey. Anyway, the chap was walking past and saw a figure. "Halt, who goes there?" No answer. "Halt, who goes there?" No answer. "Halt or I shoot!" Bang! Poor donkey. He was in charge of it. The point was, it was sad, but you know. Anyway.
And did you do guard duty just with revolvers? So you didn't have rifles?
No. Oh, no. It's all personal weapons. It was the revolver.
Were the conditions pretty rough there, in terms of eating and living conditions?
No, you see, it was, put it this way, it was not as good as maneuver. But the upset was offset by the newness, and also, of course, we were right smack next to a town with all the girls. Oh, wow. Anyway, the transport section of the headquarters and the fitters and what have you, they took us away and put us into a hall down in the town. Something like some old fashioned religious organisation. And we were very comfortable there. There was a nice gas fire going and what have you. And the old boy next door, he was delighted. He lived there, he was the caretaker. He was delighted to have us there. And he used to invite us in for a drink, you know. And whiskey, you know. But and across the road from us was a coffee stall. And we had to get in a lorry and go back up the hall for meals. But it means you have to get up early as well. But it didn't really matter a great deal. There was a coffee stall there, so we used to go and have our I suppose you're in tune that moment over there, the old sausage. It was very nice too.
And how the people of the town received you?
With absolute open arms. There was war on now. Soldiers were very, very important people. How different from, a year previous. In fact, I'll dwell quite a bit on this, if you don't mind. Now, we had purloined a garage in the town for a workshop. And so, after breakfast, we get into the old workshop lobby and go to this garage, which was halfway up the back street, it was a sort of back street off the main road, but it was the main route to the station where the people, the commuters, briefcases, were going to work in there. Now, you'll appreciate that it's quite big, the distance, and the garage was quite small, and I used to put them back in. And I was going on the left hand side of the road, and I'd come up on the left side there, and move over to the right, and then back straight in. Now, once you've got your mark on the curb where to put your nose and what have you, it was simple enough matter. And incidentally, no cab. And rather long, and by the way, with no cab, you've only got your driving mirrors. There's no one today like a mirror in the centre to look back. And so there was a hand throttle. You put reverse gear, put the hand throttle on, and stand on the seat and look back and with the steering wheel and move it in. After you've done it a couple of times, you could do it brain forward. And one day I just parked in and jumped down off the lorry, and this guy with a little lonely, wore a happy pinstripe, and he came in. He said, "I've never seen such wonderfully correct and meticulously judgment in driving before. Magnificent. Very good." And off he went. There was a garage there, and we were beginning to use, there was a lace in the garage, in fact, it had a machine workshop, and so we were beginning to find that you just couldn't say, "Oh, get it out of the tech stores." We would probably have to start making, which became an... So you see, my training as a turner, the one of the tech store began to...
And what kind of things were, what duties were you carrying out?
Oh, repairing, as I say, the garage was attached to a large area, open area, where the tanks would come in. We were now beginning to do real fitters work. I didn't. About four journeys up to Nuffields from there, up the old A5, with a tank engine. It was far better if those, I knocked a big end or something like that. Far better to take the whole engine off, got cranes in there, put in my lorry, and we go to Birmingham. So I was getting. Being a proper old transport driver again, but it was great. By the way, I think I'm too old now to be put in the glass house, but we would go up and take enough fuel to get up and back again. We couldn't pull in and get filled up anyway. And so I would have on board, 20, 32-gallon cans of petrol to make sure I didn't get back. I saw one or two of those to the workers. actually, it never crossed my mind, but I was ready to come away one. By the way, I wasn't there by myself, understand. There was the one officer, one mechanist. He used to come, because he liked to ride out. Anyway, he was having a pint somewhere in there. One of the workers came along and said, "Petrol was spare." And the guard would like, I said, "Yeah, I didn't even ask the price. Well, I think he'd give me a bomb or something for a couple of yards." He bought some a couple of yards of petrol. But then, of course, those things were running, but I think 1 and 4 a gallon or something. But anyway, as I say, I sold a couple of gallons on two occasions, wouldn't I? I don't know more. Don't know if I get caught, it's not worth it, you know.
The petrol they were using in the unit for its vehicles, was that army?
Empty.
And it was and brought up to you, was it?
It was just one step away from Barrow, we used to say. But in the meantime, when we moved up from Fording Bridge, we had our tanks there, but the tank crews left us from transport to the railway station, and we went up. And the tank crews appeared at the other place with all the tanks. And we have always incorrectly called them Valentine tanks. Now, a Valentine tank, By the way, funny name, isn't it? Vickers Armstrong Company, here on the town, built, designed and built this particular tank as a private venture. And when they built the prototype, and the sort of plans had been done for the War Office, and said, here, we could, this is a tank we can offer you. The War Office said, yes, I think we'll accept that. It was on the 14th of February. That's Valentine's Day. So, whether that's true or not, I don't. If I may just broaden a little bit here, I like the reason why it was called Valentine's Day. It was not Valentine, not I, but a Y. So, as you say, V-A, Vickers Armstrong, and the last that was filled with town on the town was a joy. That's a true one. That's Dominus, true. But the Valentine tank actually was, it had the AEC engine, it had a bigger engine in, it had all the quick thread steering clutches, it had the 2-pounder gun, it was the same sort of shape as the tank we had. But the Valentine tank was very much heavier because it was an infantry tank. Its engine was 180 horsepower, whereas the tanks we had, same shape and everything, lighter, not so much anymore, it was about 98 horsepower. And of course, the Valentine could only do about 15 miles an hour, our tanks could do 30 miles an hour. There were a cruiser tank, but I understand when you talk about a cruiser tank, to my mind anyway, immediately say cruisers, oh, it's big wheel. Well, the Valentine had, you look at one side of the Valentine tank, you've got the sprocket at the rear, actually, yes, the sprocket at the rear. Come forward to that, and you've got the first group of rows, which is a large, a smaller, and a smaller one of three. Then the next group of rows is small, bit larger and larger one, then the return wheel at the front, that type of tank. But as I say, I think it's a Cruiser Mark IV, I think was but we always just call it a Valentine because from a distance it looked like it, except for the turret. The turret was very, very thick on the Valentine, and ours was a flat effort. But anyway, that is the tank that we actually took to France with. But we had those tanks, and also, of course, the cruiser tank, the Christie cruiser tanks. Well, half and half, I would say.
So you went to France with Valentine's, did you say?
And Christie
cruiser. So you lost
I'm
your.
I'm using the term Christie cruiser because I don't know the proper name for it. It's the, put it like this. Nothing's version of the Christie cruiser, I've got it right now. And so, as I say,
your own tanks that you had were changed.
Yeah.
When did that occur?
As I say, obviously the army organised that. They just took. We just left them at 40 minutes, we'll be taken away.
This was on your journey up to.
What happened, I don't, and I never did find out. But obviously, they would go to some. Who knows? They may have gone to. Newcastle for the Valentine. But there will be some place where you know for issuing tanks out. But they'll have gone there. Did Cockfights or something like that? I don't know. But they suddenly appeared as far as I was concerned.
Was it a good tank, the Valentine?
Fair enough for its day. Yes, it was the as I say. I've got to be very careful, especially when somebody's listening to this tape, they get the term Valentine, he says he's over wrong, he's talking about the infantry tank. I'm not, I'm talking about the tank that looked like in that Valentine. I may be wrong, just call it the Cruiser Mark IV, call it that, shall we? Which looked at a distance like a Valentine.
So the tank that you had, the tanks you did have and went to France with, weren't Valentine's, just looked like Valentine's. Is that what you're telling us?
Right.
Get that
you
right.
Call them
yes, I've got them right. Right.
Anyway, we were there until just after Christmas because we were given my only wartime home leave that first Christmas, 4 days over the Christmas, and I got engaged. However, that before we get to Christmas, what sort of life away from the tanks did we have there? We had a magnificent, every door of every house was wide open to us, and the Saturday night hop was a absolute tremendous. As a matter of fact, I've got a photograph that you've seen probably of the Saturday Night Hop. Now, that photograph is copied from the Contemporary newspaper, of course, and the newspaper had with that photograph obviously a story. And the story spoke of the remarkably high number of local girls who had become engaged and even married in that short time to a remarkably large number of tank men that appeared in that list. And then there's I have since actually gone with my wife, of course. I've gone and visited them since then. You know, we had a magnificent Saturday night. We went to the Wesleyan Chapel on Sunday. First time in life I went without having a tour at all. It was. Oh, and by the way, all the bathrooms of the place were open to us, which seems ridiculous, but there was no means. There wasn't no means of bathrooms at Hartman. Up at the hall, they did put these canvas. The hot water put it this way, was water, and the cold water was ice.
Did your wife, girlfriend come from Harpenden?
No.
So you weren't one of the Harpenden men?
No. When we came home, Bonnie, northeast last from Stanley, had been sort of going out with when on leave, you know, nothing sort of definitely, just friendly scum, probably the dancer's family and what have you, and enjoyable Saturday night evening when I go hiking, of course, was very popular over there. Anyway, I came home. And I popped the question and was accepted. So I can always remember my first home leave, of the war. 4 days. And that was quite a. Matter of fact, I wrote an article in the tank, almost a few years ago, about that. About that journey, which was mixed up with the first journey I went home. When I first went home from Bovington on that Christmas in 1935, I was there with putties and everything, and I put it on too tight, and I was trying to get home and get the damn things off, you know. But of course, when I went home on the Christmas leave, or the first of Christmas leave, I was wearing the newfangled battle dress.
With gaiters?
Yes. I didn't even have gaiters on. I didn't smell them off. But I'll say that's another story.
So you had changed in the sense that you were getting the new battle dress and equipment that went presumably with it?
Mm. Well, as I say, the battle dress. Was given, we only had one, that's right, one suit. You see, our kit requirement was two lots of khaki, and we changed one lot. We still had our original, because that was our battle dress. Our, in bracket, battle dress, as you know it, was our dress. And our First World War uniform was all battle dress, so he was still in bodies for battle.